The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on February 10th, 2002, in Wicklow, Ireland.
I've lined up a couple of lecture and discussion topics for today and one for the next time, which invite audience participation. And the form is a series of questions that somebody can answer, and I'll attempt to answer them, and I'll ask you to I'll ask for devotees to answer too. I wanted to set some rules or guidelines to the participation. Devotees should speak in a non-political way, and the way to do that is to forego details of your situations as much as possible if you have some complaint or something, and get to the philosophical essence or question or point or whatever, because what we're trying to do is churn up Krishna conscious topics. If you want to discuss more details of your lives, you can follow up in a private letter to me or in your talks with others. And devotees should keep their comments on the shorter side and focus on the point. It would really be good if I could let you know in advance what the topic was, but I only came up with it very recently. But at the end of this class, I can let you know what the topic is for the next class. So this class is living with anarthas, because that's where I'm at. So anarthas, you know, means unwanted, undesirable habits. So here's my first question. Devotees acknowledge that despite our ideals, we're actually struggling with anarthas. We may also admit that we are not really struggling with our anarthas, but rather accepting them as part of our lives and personalities. How hard are we meant to struggle against desires and habits that seem too intrinsic to ourselves? These are like the kind of questions I get in letters from devotees. And I try not to be either too lenient or too strict in my replies, but just to be a helpful friend or spiritual father, to give advice, because ultimately each person has to act on their own. These questions also, they don't differ in terms of being like separate in airtight compartments, because we don't live that way, and they kind of they overlap somewhat, but we'll take them one at a time. So I'll open up and then hope that you'll open up. I think there's an essay by me in Dr. Godhead presently about this, about having ideals and living with our reality. Have you seen that Back to Godhead yet, with a painting by me in it? Okay. So it acknowledged that Krishna, Krishna and the spiritual master, they gradually help us to come to the point of surrender, and at the same time aware that we can't make full surrender now, but we shouldn't give up our aspirations while we're not at the perfect point. Therefore there must be some struggle. The word here, maybe one of the key words is struggle. Why should we give up the struggle? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that a person who still commits some abominable activities, how does the Sanskrit go? Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam nanyavat. But is firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness, accepting Krishna the Supreme in his heart. He's still a devotee. Nobody should say he's not a devotee. And Prabhupada says this is a warning to the non-devotees not to criticize a devotee who, due to past habits or the power of Maya, falls down from time to time. But then he finishes the purport, says this is not, however, to be taken as an excuse that devotees should just go on and on committing sinful activities. So we have to make this struggle, effort, especially when we've taken initiation. That's a serious thing. You make those vows, and they're not meant to be oppressive inhibitions on your life, but it's a serious commitment, and your life has to change in certain ways to be a devotee. I was going to start this. I forgot something, but it's not too late to do. I wanted to start this class by reading a poem by Robert Frost, which is only indirect application here. But I thought of it now because of what I just said about that when you become a devotee, your life should change. And actually, the Hare Krishna devotee is certainly a different kind of person in the world. So his life becomes different at that time. You each can remember. I know my life is completely different from the time I met Prabhupada and took initiation, from what it was and where it was heading before I met him. So here's the poem. It's called The Road Less Traveled. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden black. Yet I'll save one for another day, but knowing how way leads on to way, I doubt that I should ever come back. And took the other as just as fair for having perhaps the better claim, for it was grassy and wanted wear, yet as for the passing there had warned them really about the same. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere, ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the road less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. So I was advocating that we should take the road less traveled by, not the kind of life that everybody lives, but a life of adventure, a life of truth, too, that when you see the truth, you say, well, this is the truth, I have to follow this, even though it seems a little odd. I won't live like a Christian, like all the other people in my nation. I will de-emphasize money-making career and all that. This Krishna consciousness is a very unusual kind of life, but I'll take to it. Plus, it has very high standards, and I'll have to try to follow those standards. So this is what we've done in Krishna consciousness. We've taken the road less traveled. But we're finding that we can't always keep on this path on the highest standards. So My answer to the first question, how hard are we meant to struggle against our desires and habits that seem too intrinsic to ourselves, is at least my answer so far is that we should keep trying and not give up. Keep the standards of Krishna consciousness. Don't think they're too high or impossible or against our very nature. Does anyone want to contribute and say something on this first one? How hard are we supposed to struggle? Yeah.
Well, sometimes it seems like it's an attempt to struggle to increase our level of you know, application of the standards, that we might actually reach a false level. And then, you know, I think that's like I've definitely experienced that you push yourself beyond what you're really honestly capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not obviously not able to maintain that. And sometimes that encouragement to struggle and push yourself too far.
Yeah.
But we have to come back to a realistic level.
Okay. Yeah.
I also think it's a very extremely personal process. But it's a process, but it's an application is completely based on how Krishna decides to apply it to us, and that what we're capable of is what we should be doing. And if we're capable of what we're not doing, then that's my understanding of offense. It's not an offense when I let Krishna see if we're capable of something better or not doing it. So an art has become really anarchic and really detrimental. So we are capable of better, and I make a decision not to do it, and therefore I'm ignoring something Krishna's given me. And therefore that's when an art becomes a major trouble, as opposed to knowing I have them.
When it's in your power to overcome it.
Yeah.
And you don't. That would be out of laziness or gross sense gratification.
Point, but it's almost safer to take that road or by being wary of it, that if we overdo it, then we know what if Krishna sees our sincerity to try, and then he gives us the intelligence to do it what we should be doing, as opposed to not trying at all and then probably just going along with our own ideas and not getting anywhere.
I was thinking of that expression of Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the zigzag path of truth, that sometimes we go this way and sometimes we go that way, that we can't always just go in a linear way without interruption, more and more renunciation, more and more advancement. So if we do fail, then we don't have to go all the way back to the beginning, but we go a little one way and a little one another way, and we make progress on the chart. The fact that you pulled back or went to the left doesn't mean that you can't. You should always keep the ideals in mind and pray for strength. What does that mean, keeping the ideals in mind? I heard Prabhupada talking the other day in 1968. He was telling the devotees that about celibacy. He said it's very important practice. He said, but in this age, all these things, different austerities, he said, they're very difficult to follow. But we should pray to Krishna for strength. We're very, very weak, and pray to Krishna for strength. It was very appealing to me, the idea of prayer and the idea of what to pray for. And then he said, that and chanting Hare Krishna is all we can do in this age. Can't practice great austerities and so forth. So when we find we can overcome austerities, and ask Krishna to give us strength. Yes, Moksha.
I find that I'm not like even after you can't stay in one place. So if you're not actually going completely the wrong way, you're going to be forced to make a move, or you will not see them as an athlete anymore, and then you're lost. Or if you always see them as an athlete, then you will be forced, because you've seen them at some point, to move further. So, in some ways, the struggle is a forced struggle.
Mm-hmm.
If you take in, you know, like if you're honest and if you want to. So it seems to be impossible like Krishna pushed you in that.
Yeah.
It seems to be impossible that you're not going all one way or the other.
Krishna will push you, and as long as you don't completely lose your intelligence and become a puppet of Maya, then you might just go, like you said, go the other way and not even know what you're doing and give up the idea of what you're supposed to do, that you're a devotee and what a devotee should do. So in order to not become like that, one should stay in the association of devotees and Krishna consciousness. You were saying, Baladev, how this philosophy, if you believe in this philosophy, you can't get away from its conclusion, Bhagavad Gita 101. Can you give a little expression to that?
It's so clearly presenting what we have to do, that despite whatever difficulties come, in one sense is an easy conclusion, just surrender. 1863, whatever it is, surrender to Krishna. But there's, it's like all of the struggle between the identity with the body and mind, and the freedom of the soul.
At least theoretically, we can't escape the conclusions. They're all. It's very easy to learn the basics of Krishna consciousness. You can learn it in 6 months in Bhagavad Gita. And there it is. And you're either going to defy it, or you just can't escape the conclusions. So you made a good point. I was going to say that as long as you didn't lose your intelligence completely, but you're making the point that even if the devotee or the jiva loses his grasp, Krishna will push him, and he can't stay in one place. Dina?
When you're reading the poem, you're talking about the two roads in the woods, I was thinking, for myself anyway, sometimes it's like I haven't actually set foot on either road, because the materialistic road, you don't want to embrace that fully. It's like, I want to go on the spiritual road, but being some of the material road with me, so kind of stuck in between, you know, because I'm afraid to make that leap, step on the right, so that's the one that you want to go on, and it's like a dream of what is it like to get early every morning, chant, and, you know, be really spiritual person, but afraid to let go of things that you think, you know, you're enjoying, and you can't.
Well, yeah, it's not completely absolute, one or the other, that our spiritual path is completely devoid of sense gratification or is perfect. But I think you are on the spiritual path, and you've given up the material path, so you can't go back. Let me get into some details of what we're talking about with an artist, number two. We could say that activities like watching television or listening to non-devotee music are hindrances to our concentration on Krishna. And these activities are something that we do out of a lack of taste for Krishna consciousness and a kind of mental laziness or need for distraction. Isn't it human to need to turn off the mind and indulge in distraction a certain portion of the time? Well, I'll give some philosophical answers first, and then we'll grapple with the nitty-gritty of the human. But we should be careful in talking about human needs also, that we don't abandon the Krishna conscious Siddhanta. Remember one devotee, he was a spiritual master in ISKCON, in sannyasi, and he left all those responsibilities and went off with a woman and left a note, dear friends, and he spoke about emotional needs, that he had to fulfill his emotional needs, and this had become foremost importance to him. But he caused so much havoc for others and for himself too. And I remember thinking when I saw that there are more than one ways to fulfill your human needs, your human wants. Someone wrote me recently appreciating the art that I do and saying that you're a sannyasi, you need some way to scoop off your emotions and give expressions to things. It seems like a very good way. So Rupa Goswami says that material desires should be used in the service of Krishna. If you give them up, it's a lesser renunciation. But the key phrase is there, in the service of Krishna. So if you're doing something which you feel is like a human relief or a human pleasant activity and so forth, some question has to be there of how it's yoga, how it's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, we just get into this psychological area that, which is sometimes in opposition to Krishna consciousness. Psychologists, sometimes when devotees, Hare Krishna, meet psychologists, the psychologist tells them, just doesn't emphasize devotional service or vows at all, and just says, well, this is what you need, or this would be good for you. And it's contradictory to advancement in spiritual life. So we have our own concept of what's good in Krishna consciousness. So, what did I bring up here? Television, music. I could say, as Prabhupada might say, but I don't know how it will fly coming from me, that, well, listen to music of Krishna and watch television of Krishna. And you could say, well, there's no good music. I don't like the music in Krishna consciousness. Or it's all right, but I want some other. And I don't like, there's no good films, not enough. But that would be one reply that our founder Acharya might make. So I said, is this a lack of taste in Krishna consciousness? And is it a kind of mental laziness? And within this question, there's like a rebellious reply that, well, it's human and we need some relief we need some distraction from this Krishna consciousness, which is sometimes not satisfying us. Does anyone want to comment on that? Or any TV watchers or strict non-TV watchers? This is your chance.
I don't know if it's the right conclusion, but it appears to me in my Krishna consciousness or lack of it, it's always, there's a lot of circumstantial factors. And like that one you're bringing up, other activities that are not strictly siddhanta or not sadhana based and so on. There are parts of us that exist in certain level, even what we eat and so on, as I eat Krishna prasad and we, you know, and say that and so on. Because there has to be like a fulsome approach. And not trying to shift the blame onto anything else, like, oh, it's gone, and society hasn't really worked, you know, our schools or
falling apart, or you don't have really a social, you know, outlet for those who are maybe not so advanced and so on, you know. So that I do believe there's different levels of advanced devotees. I think that's fantastic, but not again, not to use that as an excuse, but I do think that it would be helpful for me anyway to be in a situation where I can maybe associate with others that are want to be devotees, but have an idea of how to make our activities Krishna conscious, whatever they may be. And I think that certainly for me anyway, it would be helpful, that I feel there's a lack there.
To be able to associate with devotees.
Mm. Well, I put it this way, when I lived in the temple, for a certain time, for a couple of years, it was great because all your needs were fulfilled. I wasn't married, I was single, and all so many different activities, whether it was, you know, going through distribution or high now or this or that, you know, you were quite enthusiastic to do that, and that was very, very helpful. But then you get married and you have to make a living and so many other things, and you may not be associated with devotees to do that. And, you know, what I'm saying is they do have an effect, an cumulative effect.
Mm.
And then maybe I'm just asking devotees different ideas of how
we
can get together. It seems to be important. Prabhupada mentioned social life in the Bhagavatam and so on.
Yeah. I'm not very good on social organization and that kind of thing, but it would seem that that there are plenty of people in the same position as you are, who are young and surrounded, living in the temple, and who can't do that, or the temples can't facilitate you like that. But from your new position, you can associate together. Bhadra has people over his house on Monday nights, and we're out here in Wicklow, and originally it was the devotees moved here with more of a conception of being like a tight community, but it was overbearing. But maybe there's room for rethinking some of that or something, or just on a very personal level that you associate with devotees without it being a quote community unquote per se. So Uddhava said, does anyone have any helpful remarks on what he said? Certainly it's essential that if you're associating with devotees, then you won't have a taste for other things. You'll be able to associate in Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
I just thought of when you gave that class with about Michelin, like that. And I remember, I think there was some point where you were talking about encouraging, just encouragement in general. And I was just thinking about sort of this point. I remember at that class, I was thinking, it just struck me how important it is to encourage people, maybe on Uddhava's point, but that maybe that's a good thing to do, that the more we encourage each other in the things that, like, for example, like your art, the more the people encourage you, the more they'll do it. And the more you encourage other people in different things, the more maybe activities there are that are going on that are satisfying.
Yeah. Let me go to the next one. In relation to the above question, the habits I mentioned above can be overcome by deciding to avoid television or non-devotee music. It could be an act of sacrifice. There are other drives, however, such as the sex drive, which are more difficult to overcome and which easily overcome us. These drives seem to be part of us, and when we indulge them, aside from the guilt we've learned to feel as devotees, it feels natural. This proves that we are not convinced by the Shastric arguments against fulfilling these drives, and we really aren't clear on the reason. How can we become more convinced? That would go back to what I tried to draw out of Baladev, that the Shastras are really teaching us something. They're teaching us that indulgence in sex will not bring us happiness. So you may not believe it, and certainly the modern world doesn't believe it, and doesn't believe the line of Srimad Bhagavatam. But if you're a devotee and if you indulge in sense gratification or illicit sex, you'll come to the point of seeing that it doesn't bring you satisfaction, doesn't bring you happiness. Rather, it puts you into entanglements, just as they're described in the forest of material enjoyment and all these different chapters in Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's one way we can become more convinced, by hearing and by unfortunate experience, if you want to learn that way. If you're the intelligent person learns by hearing, less intelligent person by experience, and then the completely unintelligent person can't learn either by lessons of hearing or by his lessons of experience. But that's a rather strict reply from me. I don't want to discourage open remarks in the class. If somebody in letters to me and says how they're having difficulty with these things, Lita Madhava says encourage. I don't encourage them to go on doing the wrong, but I encourage them. I don't condemn them. I try not to judge them, and try to give them support to keep trying and practice Krishna consciousness so that they'll come to a better level. I guess a better word would be than encourage would be forgive, and encourage to go on practicing. They shouldn't become so depressed that they, you know, just want to give up Krishna consciousness out of complete feelings of inadequacy. That's covered a little later in my question. Somebody quit Krishna consciousness and started practicing their old Christianity and said, I'd rather be a good Christian in the social eyes of the Christians than a poor Krishna conscious practicer. Because you'd be looked down upon in the society of devotees if you're always falling down and not practicing. But in Christianity, that's what you're doing is fine. As long as you accept Christ, you can be materialistic. We ask more than that. So some people, if they're so much discouraged or shunned for not being able to keep the standard, that's not good. We should try to be embracing. Someone recently asked me, have you been in touch with a devotee since he left? I said, no, he hasn't made any attempt to contact me. And then the person said, well, maybe you should initiate it. Maybe you should initiate a contact. And I thought, I hadn't thought of it that way, that I have that option of trying to reach out to him. And there are other devotees I know, thinking of a devotee in Italy who slip down from the standard and not follow, and then when he would go to the temple, he put so much work into the temple, but now he became discouraged with how the devotees reciprocated with him, and would get into arguments with them when he visited, thinking they weren't compassionate. So he was a little feisty in his attitude, but they were quite negative toward him too. But whenever I would go there, I would still always see him as a good friend. And now he's changed. He's coming more to his normal self. But this is a little tangent on this topic. The topic is sex indulgence outside of the rules and regulations, and how an individual should be convinced not to do it. But I'm making the side point that if you can't do it, how to see devotees like that. Anyone wants to comment on it? Okay, I'll move along. Sometimes devotees say that they indulge in anartas, breaking the principles or watching television or whatever, because, quote, that's where I'm at, unquote. Such a statement seems to lack a follow-up of aspiration for pure Krishna consciousness. When we say that, that's where I'm at, are we actually saying that that's where our hearts are at? If so, should we feel sad about that? How deep is that statement, that's where I'm at? If you mean it like heart and soul, well, honestly, this is who I am with all these attachments. That's my actual nature. That would seem to be not really true, an unfortunate assessment of yourself. But I already said we shouldn't feel too depressed about our lack of perfection. So how do you think we should feel if we say this about our anartha attached self, when we say that's where I'm at? How should we feel about that, Dina?
Our family wants to tell you. So you don't. It's kind of, you appear foolish to see if you just say, "Well, I watch it because I enjoy it," because you know the philosophy that it's the texture of Krishna consciousness is going in India and spiritual life. So it's kind of like a guard against, you know, something really, really. It's more foolish to know it's wrong and do it than to say, "Well, that's where I'm at," even though you watch it because you enjoy it and you're attached to it, you know. That can look very, very foolish.
To admit that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, admitting it at least to yourself.
Yeah.
or to others. It could appear very foolish to dare to say that. I'm not exactly sure what point you're making.
Well,
you wouldn't dare to say that.
You know, it's not something you're meant to do if you're practicing spiritual life.
Yeah.
Because you know that, but you still do it.
Yeah.
It makes you look more foolish than just say, "Well, it's just where I'm at."
Yeah.
It's more of an excuse for you, you know.
Hmm. Well, if you really face that if you see that as very foolish, that should make you a little uncomfortable about doing it. That might be good then. You know, you might do it for a while and say, "Oh, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to keep this up because this isn't where I'm at." But I was indulging in it for a while. Let's stop this. Let's ask Krishna for strength to not do it. Let's do something better. If you admit that it's a foolish activity and yet you like to do it, and it's not just foolish, but it's, you know, harmful to your spiritual life. Karuneshri, did you want to say something?
I watch Harry sometimes as well, and I was thinking that sometimes when I'm doing that, I get good, but there's other things I'd rather be doing that would probably be a bit more fulfilling for me. But it's kind of laziness that I can't stop when I see things that are easy. But then it's hobbies and things that are probably fulfilling me more that get neglected because I give that time to, you know, the television and stuff. So I was thinking if I could, you know, be more reminded of that, then
Yeah. Hobbies that could be more dovetailed in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah,
I find there are so many things that I want to do, and by the time the day is over, I don't get them done. So the idea of wasting significant amounts of time on things that are really detrimental. I would be foolish. And there are harmless things that satisfy the human nature too, and that are part of Krishna consciousness even. This is where I'm at, and they bring you happiness, and there's nothing wrong with them. Krishna consciousness isn't a stereotype. It has to be done only in one way. It can be according to your nature. Yes, copy.
Just when you were saying that self-religion came from Vietnam, there's one time when I'm back to somewhere else, it's not a good thing to know when I'm learning more. And I felt very well, and I felt really like out of place being in Vietnam, because I felt like a lot of dirt walking through the garden, and then I went to, one of the Goswami Samadhis, and I just felt like, well, this is where I'm at, this is me, I had no choice but to, although I kind of like wanted to run away, or run to the west, or like whatever, because when you're surrounded by that spiritual potency, you see yourself even more into like where you're at and want to. But then I found that a very humbling feeling, but at the same time, it's like, we had discussions in classes with Dhamma Maharaj about hope against hope, and it was kind of like this feeling like, well, just remembering Krishna's mercy, and hoping, almost like hoping against hope for that, and it's a sobering feeling, but also I was thinking, well, I want to take that back. Remember that is my position, because when I'm surrounded by that in the West, it's like I can merge into that and feel alright about it. But when you're in that very spiritual potency, even when you're reading or chanting or feeling fully gone, you're not to God, or you as feel out of place even more, because you just see where you're at. So I felt that glimmer of remembering Krishna's mercy. And I remember your compassion book was very helpful. It talks about Krishna's compassion. And it struck me, because I always think, oh, Krishna's so... Sometimes some of the things I've been going through is Krishna's compassion is so heavy, but it's like he loves it. And I'm trying to remember it. And it gave me some hope. So I thought that was kind of... Well, this is why I'm at, but it doesn't mean that you can become complacent. It can mean a yearning or a hope.
Well, that's a wonderful application of this. Of the phrase hope against hope, that, and also this is where I'm at, and wishing for mercies that I could be uplifted. Thank you. Let me read another one. Some devotees continue on the path of anarthas because they feel helpless to overcome them. But because of our training in Krishna consciousness and the weight of the ideals we have learned to uphold, we suffer from a cycle of guilt, defiance, shame, despair, all of which feeds our sense of helplessness. At some point, it becomes too difficult to continue trying to overcome a problem or bad habit, and we become unwilling to subject ourselves to that particular emotional cycle either. We simply change our standards, the less conflicting path, and we call that self-acceptance and where we're at. Is there help for us? So this describes not even hope against hope, but just giving up hope and still knowing that Krishna consciousness is something this sounds a little bit close to giving up Krishna consciousness entirely, as some devotees do, and they become ex-devotees, because it was just too hard to keep up the standards, and they weren't keeping them up. So I'd say, well, better to live without this oppression on me. This renunciation is not necessary in my life. And as you were saying, Uddhava, association is helpful. There's also bad association, where people will say, yeah, Hare Krishna's got too much high standards and renunciation and so forth. It's not good for you. So on your own or in bad association, you can go through these cycles and just feel it's impossible to follow Krishna consciousness. And you feel very inadequate. Now, I would like to bring up something connected to this is instead of this, a person might say, this is where I'm at, and not want to be honest with oneself and not want to be criticized by others for where you're at. And feel that there's a kind of integrity or honesty to taking this stand. Because actually, who is perfect? Who is following everything? And maybe there's a lot of hypocrisy that goes, little hypocrisy or big hypocrisy that goes on. And so someone who's not a hypocrite is making a kind of a good step forward, and with hopes that in the future one can be improve and be honest. But now practice what you actually can. So what is my question is, what is the virtue in that non-hypocritical life? Not being afraid of peer criticism, even though your position is less than standard. Uddhava?
I suppose the way I'd answer that is that being in a situation where it's not the dumb thing to admit. Because it struck me when people were saying, that's where I'm at. Another way is that I'm just foolish. And it's nice people say, I am foolish. You know, some people are not foolish, and you can see, like I would embarrass you by pointing out, you're not foolish. You are getting up early in the morning, chanting Hare Krishna, and absorbing your time in Krishna's service. So you're not foolish. But I am foolish because I don't do that for many different reasons, and all can be so complicated and so on. But it's nice to at least be able to admit that to someone. Because in my experience, I've been in an environment where that isn't admitted. But in fact, if you do admit that, you know, you live in a precarious situation. You may not be accepted for what you are, and you know, so hypocrisy can become a big thing, and people don't like it. Hypocrisy anyway, ultimately it becomes a real turn-off. Because there's one thing I just thought about in the Irish Independent the other day. There was an issue on the Hare Krishna's, just in the back of it, all the stuff that went on with Gurukuls, you know, and it was just a paragraph. But one point that struck me the most about that is they frankly admit it. It was actually quite amazing, you know, and they frankly admit this. And I thought, this is a real problem in Ireland with the Catholic Church, but they're not frankly admitting the things that are going on. And that looked like a brilliant move to do, to put, you know, people like that, you know.
Yeah.
I certainly like that, you know. And
yeah.
I like to be able to frankly admit, you know, not how I want to do it. And I do understand the point, that's not the solution, it's just to frankly admit where you're at and just leave it like that and get worse. Most people say you can't stay in one place.
Yeah.
I subscribe to that.
In the church and in politics, it's so much lying and hypocrisy. So that's an important first step, is admitting that we do these things, and then come together and say, you know, how can we improve? Do we want to improve? What's the problem? the hypocrite. And among devotees and of this movement, and especially leaders of this movement, if they're not following what they're teaching others to follow and so forth, then the whole purity is the force, the whole structure becomes corrupt.
I don't know if it's a valid point. It's just it's like an ashrama thing would be slightly different, the standard would be slightly different for somebody who is safe with sannyasi and UBC and somebody who is like just grihasthi living outside, and then somebody who is grihasthi living in the temple, somebody who is retired grihasthi, it would be slightly different, and it should be all in continuation. It's not like it was kind of a discouraging thing for other devotees, like when they discovered one sannyasi, he was really into the video stores and he was getting so many videos, and then somebody else was saying, well, it's what I am, but I'm grihasthi, I'm at this stage. So it seems to me that there's this gradual, like in a sex, if somebody is just married, or somebody is married for 10 years, it will be like much less provocation in terms of sex. And also, if somebody is sannyasi, he should be even more renounced, obviously, and don't have any sex at all.
So there's different activities are appropriate according to the life position.
Yeah, life position. So it's not like universal things. It would be nice to see some, understand. If that's like discouraging to somebody who is struggling and trying to be a good grihasthi and follow the principles. Just a comment. It's a social step where you have a more renunciation in the end of life and more natural.
Yeah. So those who are preaching or counseling or whatever, they should be aware of this. I like in general the concept of support rather than judgment, you could say. When people have problems, you should listen to what they say and respect them as sincere. And only when you can befriend them, then you can point out maybe they've done something wrong according to religious standards and they need support. Trust that the Krishna will help them and they'll pull through the problems. Pachi?
I like to think, Baladev mentioned as well, the point earlier that most of devotees that I know, we do know the conclusion, we do know what we have to do. And there seems to be, if you mention the word, give it, cut me a little slack or be a little patient, because as Chaitanya says, there are times when there are natural psychological times to go through in our life. You may get to 55, 60 years of age, you're certainly not going to think. I can see the difference in my mentality when I was 18 years of age when I first joined, and now I'm 38. I'm just a different person completely. But I still am in the mentality that many times that I've just joined the temple or something, and we're all the same. Yeah. We're all on the same level. And I may be trying to think you're giving a very straightforward explanation, presentation of Krishna consciousness. And I know I have to aspire to that. But I'm not able to live the life that you can lead.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just grateful to have that association that no one's bearing down heavy, and because I can't do that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm convinced that I can do it, and yeah, I will do it. But I don't want to be condemned for that.
Especially at the present evolution in your life, you will get to it. You're hoping you'll get to it. It seems like so many comments said in the class are all coming together, hope against hope, and not condemning a person. And not preaching inappropriately to people at different stages in life. Not being hypocrites. Aniruddha?
I saw a film once. It's a
don't remember any of the actors or anything of the musical film, but it's about a very young lawyer, and he was taking on some multinational American conglomerate for some kids who got cancer, and it was an insurance claim. But at the end of the film, he was comparing himself, the young lawyer who actually won the case, he was comparing himself to the head lawyer in the insurance company he was in the insurance company he was taking on. And it was just the narration he was speaking. And he says, there is a line that you mustn't cross. And if you cross that line, something terrible happens. That line goes away and you no longer see what your limits are, what's right and what's wrong. You just kind of quite ordinarily go into immoral, forbidden activity. And anyway, I remember that particular line, that there's a line you don't cross, because if you do, that line will disappear. And that's the worst thing that can happen, that you no longer clearly see what's okay and what's not. Anyway, it's very important and helpful for me to come here and hear a class like this from someone who is very much on the right side of the line. One word you use, you're talking about, is necessary. We feel it's nice to have distractions in terms of music and TV, and in my mind I'm just playing with that word, distraction. We are attracted and we were disattracted. So by putting on a CD, we don't have a TV, but I've got lots of CDs. I'm choosing to be disattracted to Krishna. And then I wonder why I can't chant with such wonderful attention in the morning and I don't make a connection with this. I'm foolish, I guess it makes the point, it's not to say. Important for me to kind of believe this, to reestablish the law.
Let me look at this last one because my usual time is up. Is it wrong to think of the struggle with an artist as being directed by Krishna? I mean, that it is Krishna who is not granting us release from our particular problem. Is it necessary for us to overcome our particular anartas before we can approach Krishna? Can we use our anartas to drive us to Him? A big question. I take too much time to answer. But I think things are a test by Krishna. Sometimes we say we're being tested by Maya, but it's almost the same thing to say we're being tested by Krishna, to see whether we're a sincere devotee. But to say that Krishna is not letting us get free of our anartha, not in some unfair way, like an unfair father is punishing us, but I think he wants us to prove ourselves in that struggle, sincere, and then he'll let us go. We have to do some necessary things, and then we won't be sitting back in these anarthas. We have to clean up our acts, and then approach Krishna. He's all pure, and we have to become pure. Can we use our anarthas to drive us to him? In the sense of being disgusted with them and just saying, I just want to get rid of these things, that can provide a way to go forward. So kind of the opposite of complacency. You see all this unwanted baggage that you have and you just want to clean it up, clean up your house, and do better. When I look out in our yard and I see if it's very trashy, you right away want to say, oh, we should clean this place up. If you look in your heart and you see all that, it can drive you to Krishna. I'm never going to get to Krishna with all this stuff. An artist can help you. Okay, so then the next time I give a class, I'd like you can think about this. I'd like to talk about impediments. I'm going to talk about impediments in my life and how I try to overcome them and how they're helpful in spiritual life. I'll be talking about things like health, and you might have family problems. There's so many problems. You can view them as material or spiritual problems, but they're things that you're impediments. And maybe we can hear some inspirational stories of how devotees overcame these problems, or how they work dynamically in a good way. And I have a number of questions about them. But I'll speak autobiographically about my own and then ask you for yours. How you overcame them or how you're still struggling with them, and they seem to obstruct your Krishna consciousness life, whatever it is. Lack of money, lack of understanding. Okay, thanks very much. Hare Krishna.